And so here were all of my friends gathered around when we got ready to make the announcement. And so I turned over to Job 3:26. And that verse says, "The thing that I greatly feared has come upon me." In Ephesians 5:16, we are commanded to redeem the time. Redeeming the time because the days are evil. And in the Phillips translation of Romans 12:2, we're warned that the world constantly tries to squeeze us into its mold. And so about the only way that we can get the time to do the things we want to do is to redeem it back, because there's already a first call on it. Now, I think it's interesting to notice there in Ephesians 5, that in verse 18, we're told to be filled with the Spirit. And with these things being in this order, it seems like that being able to redeem the time is a prerequisite to being filled with the Spirit. I think in this connection of the man the Lord chose in the Old Testament, and those that Christ chose to follow him, to be his disciples. In every case I can think of, he chose busy people. Who can you think of in the New Testament? What were some of the fellows doing, some of the men doing when Christ called them? You tell me. A couple of them were fishing, right there, right, actively engaged in it, weren't they, when he called them? And Matthew was sitting there. We call him a tax collector. I heard somebody say once that this really was a misnomer, that what he was a tax informer. And as a Jew, that when these people come in from the country, in order to keep from getting too high an assessment, they'd put on their old clothes and look as unprosperous as possible. So it was Matthew's job to turn to the Roman and say, "Now, don't let those old clothes deceive you. He's loaded." So good to him. Well, he was in the tax business anyway. Who else can you think of? Luke, yes, okay. Who else can you think of in the Old Testament? How about Elisha? Wasn't it when he was called? What was he doing? Plowing. Wasn't he? So he told him to sacrifice his ox. So he just killed his ox and sacrificed him and went on about his business. I worked for an admiral once who told me that when he had a job that had to be done right away, he always picked out the busiest man on his staff and gave him the job, because he didn't have time to fool around. He had too much to do. He had to get on with it. Larry and I were on the same ship together back, we don't remember when. So I think that's probably right. I think that's probably right, Larry, that he gave you the extra jobs. Well, what we're suggesting here, that there may be a connection between these two, that the ability to redeem the time may be a prerequisite to being filled with the Spirit. One of the earliest things I remember reading in one of my elementary school textbooks was a little poem, I guess you'd call it, which said, "Lost," you know, like a column in the newspaper, "between sunrise and sunset, two golden hours, each set with 60 diamond minutes." And then it went on saying the next sentence, "No reward is offered, as they are gone forever." So this matter of time and redeeming the time has been something that's been under discussion and consideration for a long time. And so we're going to discuss two or three phases of it this morning. Now I'd like you to take the two sheets you have, turn over the one that says the strategic use of time, Christ's example, from J. Oswald Sanders' book, Spiritual Clinic. I'd like you to read that through just the speed at which you normally read, and underline three or four of the sentences that you think are the most outstanding in this sheet, and then we'll discuss them together. And we'll just two or three of you volunteer and tell us what sentence it was you underlined. Yes.
Part of the first sentence, never giving notice, he thought it's helpless sense that he had any more important concerns than no particular interest. And then on down in the paragraph, he found sufficient time in 24 hours of the day to do the whole will of God.
How many of you underlined that letter when he found sufficient time in, what does it say, the 24 hours of the day to do the whole will of God? How many of you underlined that one? I think that's probably the sentence that sticks out the most to most people. Now, would that be true for you and for me? That there's plenty of time in the 24 hours allocated to do the whole will of God. But in the other sentence that was pointed out, have you ever sat down and had a conversation with somebody that gave you the distinct impression that they had something more important to do than to talk with you? Have you ever given anybody that impression that came to see you? Well, we'll talk more about that in a little bit. What other sentences in here are thoughts stood out to you? Jerry?
The sixth verse says, knowing that every man's life is a plan of God, we realize that his life and all the conditions in which it was to be worked out were a life in perfect control of his life.
Okay. And somebody else back here. Yes.
Interruptions can foster peace.
Okay, we'll talk more about that in a little bit too. Ted?
The last one in that paragraph, there will be time for all that God needed to do there, whether or not on their plan, not all will be needed as much as they need.
Okay. Any other thought in here? Yes.
Every hour of the Lord is for the overall purpose of his life.
I think part for no part of it having been marked by undue haste or imperfectly completed through lack of time. If you don't do it right, you might not do it at all.
Okay. Any other thought?
This one says the sound of sorrow is incredible, we're giving him today in a lot of hours.
Yes, okay. Well, now let's turn over the other mimeograph sheet you have and do the same thing on it. For a little bit. What principles are outlined in this incident?
Putting first things first.
Okay, the matter of priorities. That's probably the most important principle in here. What others do you see? Yes.
Planning ahead.
All right, that's another one. What else do we have?
Doing one thing at a time.
Doing one thing at a time.
You don't need more knowing than more doing.
Okay. I think the greatest problem that all of us have is motivation. What else do you see in here, if anything? Well, let's discuss this matter of priorities for a little bit. I was talking with a man a while back. He said he didn't have any trouble organizing his work. He said he always started with the easiest things. And he found out that that would take up all his time, so he never did have to get around to the problems. And this is true, that we could spend all of our time working on the lesser important things, can't we? I think this is one of the most difficult things to do, is for us to determine for ourselves what our priorities are, and then to stick with them. Now, in this particular illustration, the president of this company had certain responsibilities and certain requirements that only he could do. And if he went around trying to help all the vice presidents in their job, the firm wouldn't last it very long. So that's true in your case, in my case, that nobody else can decide our priorities for us. In teaching our staff on the matter of priorities, we say that there's three sets of them. The first set is our own relationship to the Lord. That's number one priority to work on. It takes precedence over everything else. Number two is the welfare of the family. Now, if there happens to only be one family member, well, then the welfare of that family member still goes. And the third is our work or our ministry. Not everybody agrees with that priority. But I remember hearing Mrs. David Morgan say once, those who neglect their families for their ministry may end up discovering that their family was their ministry. Because through neglect of the family, they lost their ministry. So that was the highest priority on it. Now, I'd like you to take paper you have in your hand to the back of this sheet. I don't have a blackboard behind me. I thought I'd have one. And write down three words. The first word is projects. Projects. Yeah, projects. And the second word, routine. And the third word, unplanned. And if you want to use the word this lady used earlier, you could put in parentheses interruptions. But we'd like to be a little more polite on this and call it the unplanned. Now, to try to tie these various things together we've talked about, I want to mention some things that have been very helpful to me. I think of my day in these three areas of projects, routine, and the unplanned. So sometime, generally the day before, or maybe before I come to work, I have made out a list. Sometimes it's written down, sometimes it's in my head, of five or six things that it's the most important for me to accomplish today. Now, this isn't just a target I'm going to shoot at. This is what I'm going to do. This is the five or six things that I'm going to do today. So I will get started on it. And in the process, while they're going on, certain routine matters come in. So work on the routine a little bit. And then there's always a few unplanned things come along. People, projects, and so forth. But I refuse to allow the routine and the unplanned to take the initiative. And as the day goes on, if it appears that those things which were selected as being the projects that had to be accomplished today, if it looks like they're not going to be done, then I disappear. Disappear. In other words, the routine and the unplanned can't find me. Because I'm going to determine what my priorities are, not the routine and not the unplanned. Now, immediately, your response would be the same as my secretary's is. And she says, yes, but I can't do that. So I tell her that her number one project every day is from the time she comes to work till she leaves is doing what I want her to do. So she doesn't have any problem then to escape the routine and the unplanned to get at her project, because that is her project, you see. Now, mine are a little bit different, but that is her number one project. I was talking to a young lady, a secretary, about a year ago, who had a regular job, and, you know, a regular 40-hour-a-week job, and she had quite an extensive Christian work, and it was all right with her boss if she redeemed the time, used the little time available to make phone calls or write notes or study a little bit. But this wasn't working out too well. And she was kind of frustrated because pretty soon she resented the fact that her job was taking away from what she thought was most important to work on. So I suggested to her, well, it looks to me like you better get a half-time job, because your priority is to do what you're being paid to do during the hours that you're working there. Now, if you feel Christian work is more important than your job, then you better cut it down so you can give the proper priority. Now, in the case of a busy wife and mother, in many cases, her number one project is just to carry out the routine and perhaps the unplanned. Well, if she knows this is her most important project and use of her time, then it isn't frustrating, because it's possible to come to the end of the day with the satisfaction that my time has been spent on the things that were the most important for me to do today. There's plenty of time in every 24-hour period to accomplish the whole will of God. So you see what I'm getting at, that we deserve the satisfaction of feeling at the end of a day that our time has been well spent and been spent on what we considered was the most important. Now, in these three areas of projects, routine, and unplanned, maybe these paperwork piles up pretty high and it begins to bother me a little bit. So I say, well, my number one project today is to clear up all of this routine that's accumulated. So then I feel justified in working on it and getting it taken care of. But if we do not allow time in our day for the unplanned, I think about Hebrews 13:2, which says that be careful, because many of you have entertained angels unawares. So God just may send somebody along that it's pretty important that we have some time with for our benefit or perhaps for theirs. But if that's not in our schedule, then even if we do crowd them in, we'll do just the opposite of what we read about with Christ here, and we'll let them know that we consider this as a pretty serious interruption and waste of our time, that if they're going to force it upon us, why, we'll sit there and go through the motions. Now, I feel that many times the unplanned event becomes the number one project and the number one priority, but not always. And we can't let the unplanned, I think, run our lives. Now, these are a few miscellaneous comments. I've got another thing or two here to mention, but I'd like to just discuss these all together. Now, what do you think about this approach? How does it apply to you? What are the problems? Yes.
Trying to have a happy medium somewhere. I mean, more of no, we get frustrated if we don't do all the things that we feel we have to do during the day. But then we can go more in the other direction and not set our priorities or have enough priorities, and then don't get anything done and get satisfied with that. So how do you guard against back and also get in that direction?
I'm not sure I understand just what you're saying there, but rather than set a bunch of priorities that can't be accomplished, I just say, well, I can't get everything done anyway, so I'm just going to do what I can and be satisfied with that. Is that what you're suggesting here? Well, I think what happens in this, somebody told me yesterday after we had this session, this lady said, well, this is such a big assignment. Why don't we just trust the Holy Spirit and let Him direct us, and then we're happy in this? I said, well, I think that's a great idea. I think the main problem is that we may mistake following the line of least resistance with the Holy Spirit's leading. Now, what I feel had happened, just to use one example in this, Charlie, that a busy housewife and mother, she can use all of her time and another extra 10 hours a day just doing things that are immediate and need to be done. So she never gets her correspondence caught up. You know, frustrated about this. Well, then I think that just pick out the things that I feel that I should do and I want to do. Okay, today, except for life and death matters in the household routine, I'm going to take out 30 minutes and write a letter. And then at the end of the day, well, I've done one thing that I wasn't just a victim of. And then start picking out a few every day so that you do have the satisfaction of working on some of the things and accomplishing them that you thought were more important than just the routine. But isn't this true of many of us that we kind of follow the path of least resistance and we end up where that something else had the initiative other than us in what we did. We didn't control our time. Somebody or something did. My wife has lived a busy life in the 26 years we've been married. And I have heard her on one or two occasions make the remark that I can't do everything. And I have told her, if she really believes that, why, she's on the road to a solution of a pretty big problem. This is the recognition that we can't do everything. We have to be selective. I have written down here a note about a painter I read about who was painting a landscape, I don't know, maybe down here at the Garden of Gods. Somebody came along, admired his painting, went on his way, came back about 3 weeks later and looked at the painting again. And he said, well, I see you haven't made much progress. And the painter said, I've made a great deal of progress. And he said, well, what have you done? I don't see any difference in the canvas. He said, well, no, the fact of the matter is I haven't even touched it. Well, then how do you say that you've made quite a bit of progress? He said, I've been deciding what I'm going to put in and what I'm going to leave out. He said, in painting a landscape, what you leave out is just as important as what you put in. So we can't do everything. We've got to decide what to put in and what to leave out, haven't we? All right, some other thought on this. Yes?
During the school year, I'm a teacher, but during the summer, I'm a housewife, and I give myself a coffee break morning and afternoon, 15 minutes each period. And I find that I'm just really relaxed after that. I go right back to my work, a lot more pep.
Good. Good thought.
Were you here last night? Did you hear Lawrence?
No, I didn't hear his message last night.
He was talking about the fact of discipleship, of course, the fact that you've got to hate father and mother and so forth. Does this tie in with the two list of priorities here? How do we determine whether we're making our family, you know, more important than our ministry, more important than God?
Well, let me just suggest a little guideline that we used to use when our children were growing up. And my wife had some outside contacts all down through the years, as both of us did. So I suggested to her once that no matter who you're ministering to, this is somebody's child. That's pretty obvious, isn't it? Regardless of their age. Now, is there any evidence in Scripture that God has given you any greater responsibility for somebody else's child than he has your own? So I think that, you see, our own are always more our responsibility than somebody else's. Now I realize there's emergency situations and so forth. But this is an area in which people in Christian work are, I think, more apt to neglect their children than anybody else. Now, I don't feel that we should be overindulgent of our children. And I think the key word in the family relationship is the word intensity. You see, it's so easy to get busy in Christian work that the sharp edge of your time is worn off, so you don't have time for the family. So with children, 2 minutes of intensity will make a great impression, while just brushing them off all the time gives them the idea that you don't have time for them. So you can accomplish a great deal, both with your wife and with your children, by just having periods of intensity where you give themselves fully and wholly to them. So the welfare of your family, I don't think, means that we are overindulgent or that we spent an undue amount of time with them, but just this matter of concentration when we do give them time. And there's plenty of time for for our own relationship with the Lord and for our family's welfare and our work or our ministry, if we just find the balance. Yes?
Something that the pastor shared with you one time is praying for the day schedule, praying before the Lord, committing it to
him. I've made a habit for many years to pray every day that God will not allow any circumstance to touch my life that's not according to his perfect will. Now, I'm not sure that I have the faith to see that fulfilled every day, because I sometimes think maybe he slipped a little bit in some of the things that came. But overall, I believe that. And this is the lion year. This is what you're talking about, I think. Does anybody else have a comment on Ted's thought here about, well, how do you find the balance between the family and the ministry and so forth?
Well, I think, number one, in any of this realm of work ethic or our relationship, whichever way you want to put it, number one, we must make a decision. Now, a decision is based on the will of God and untangling our will from it. Sometimes it can be quite a problem. A lot of us never really learn how to do this.
I think that's a very important point. In fact, that's the last verse I had written down here. It was Luke 10:42. That is, Christ was talking with Mary and Martha. He said, Mary hath chosen that good thing, which shall not be taken away from her. That's the way she arrived at what Christ considered was top priority. She chose it. Martha was involved in the routine, and I know that most women I know think that it's very difficult to give a proper exegesis of that passage of Scripture involving Mary and Martha. But Martha had her priority, and Mary had hers, and Christ said she had chosen the right one. It's always interesting, I think, to hear comments of people in the original language, and they sense some of the humor of Christ, as he literally said, Martha, you're careful and troubled about many dishes, but Mary has chosen a good dish. I heard Dr. Frank Logsdon speak once at a Bible conference. It was going to run Sunday through Wednesday, and he preached a powerful sermon Sunday morning. And then he invited all the people to come back for all the next four, Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Then after he was through with his pitch, he said, however, I've been in this business for quite a while, and I know very well that I will never see this many of you again. I've got my biggest crowd Sunday morning. So he said, I'm not being disillusioned. He said, I have concluded that in the final analysis, we do what we want to do. So he said, some of you are more interested in watching television than you are hearing the Bible. So tomorrow night, you're going to do what you want to do. And I've thought about that down through the years with real conviction. As I look back over the last 24 hours, and I'm not too well satisfied with it, I can see a picture of what my real inner desires are. Because that represents what I chose. And that's really what I wanted to do. You've heard about Martin Luther that said he found himself with twice as much work as an ordinary day. So he said, I've got to pray twice as much. So instead of his usual 2 hours in prayer, he spent 4 hours that day. A friend of mine was commenting on this, and he said, now, I used to think that what Martin Luther meant was that God somehow just doubled his energy and lengthened the day and gave him extra help so he got everything accomplished. But he said, I've changed my mind on that. He said, I think what Martin Luther did in that extra 2 hours was just sorted out what God wanted him to do. And then he didn't have twice as much to do as he could do. He just thought he did, because he hadn't determined what his priorities were. So it took him 2 extra hours to find them out. Then when he found them out, he was able to do it. Well, these thoughts are not too well tied together, but maybe this will stimulate us a little bit to work on these priorities. Is there any final comment or suggestion or question anybody has before we dismiss? Yes.
If we set priorities and establish a schedule for ourselves, somehow working with people especially demands a great deal of our time. Time that we can always print. So our schedule is thrown off kilter. What do you suggest to get back on the schedule when, say, 2 or 3 hours off?
Well, I think I understand what you, you're getting at, and I would say that you got to draw up a new list, and this priority list will change often. When the water pipe breaks, well, then there's a new priority that's developed. And I think this is it. However, I think I would be concerned when... I'd make a reevaluation when I got about 30 minutes out. Now, I wouldn't let it go until 2 or 3 hours out. Now, it may be that it's going the right direction, but at the end of 2 or 3 hours, then I would want to say, well, my schedule's changed and I've been on it. But I'd try to make a checkpoint about 30 minutes, not 2.5 hours. Any other thought or question? Yes.
What about leisure time? Should you set the schedule for leisure time or just read it out?
I think that this is a part of priority two. Well, priority one and two. Priority two, the welfare of your family. If you're the only member of your family, why? Leisure is very, very, very important. I think that it's almost universally recognized that our time is much more productive when we're in top shape. And it takes some breaks along the way to keep in top condition. A tired person can't accomplish as much in 8 hours as a fresh person can in 8 minutes. So again, there's a balance in this, but I think that's very important. Anybody else have any comment on this? Yes.
When you make up a list of priorities, do you estimate how much time they ought to take so that, again, you can figure whether you're on schedule or...
No, I think this is an obsolete concept and a very frustrating concept to allow so much time to do a job. Very frustrating. And I think of a completed job. Lose all track of time in it. Now, I know you've heard about people that block off their time. I'm going to spend 15 minutes doing this, 15 minutes doing that. Well, there are certain things in which that works, such as eating or traveling or devotional time. But when you come to a task, there's only a job, there's only one thing to do, and that is to complete it and complete it right. and forget about time and blocks of time in connection with it, is my thought on that. Well, I was, of course, thinking about myself here, the type projects I'm on. And there's a projects I'm working on that is just a phase, you know, that I'll complete. And then there'll be some little ones, such as writing three letters. So I think these must be attainable goals. And I think I see what you mean there. There's some project, it'll be 3 months before you complete it. But I'm going to complete this phase of it today. But pick out some easy ones and throw them in there too. Okay, is there any other thought here? I think coffee break's next on the schedule, isn't it? I think in the matter of studying where that you can never master the assignment, that's probably it, that your project then would be to work 20 minutes on this and 40 minutes on this and so forth, set a limit. But there are many types of jobs, and generally I would say the most important project that you need to do right now, that you can't fit it into a block of time. You can't determine how much time it's going to take. And so you'd better take the time that's necessary. And don't let priority two come in and take some of that time that's necessary for priority one. Well, thank you very much. Glad you came out for this session, and we're dismissed.